I've got this contact at the airport, one of the Chinese hostesses. She told me an unscheduled Soviet plane had taken off just 2 hours before. Four people boarded, and one of them was an invalid, a woman, in a coma. They had to carry her out on a stretcher. And they wrapped her face in bandages. Poor old cow.
Well, perhaps she was ill. It is possible. Perhaps she really was in a coma.
I wish I'd never sent that bloody cable.
Maybe the security guards found out about your little affair and removed her.
Yeah.
She might even have told Boris about it herself, taunted him with it. These things happen. Especially if she'd been drinking.
Yeah, yes. I've jumped through all those hoops, Mr. Smiley, over and over again, but it won't wash. It didn't then. It doesn't now. Look, can I have the cassette player in now, Mr. Gilman?
Sure. Oh, go and get it, George.
Irina was giving me so much dope on Moscow Center. Her training, trade craft, the setup on the Soviet residency in Hong Kong, and God knows what else, that I was having trouble taking it all down. So I bought her one of those miniature tape recorders, sort that fit in a handbag. I've handed two tapes to Mr. Gillam already.
Here we are, Ricky. I'll leave you to work it, okay?
Well now, Mr. Smiley. Irina and me, we had a couple of dead letterboxes. So, after the business at the airport, I checked them out. You know, just in case. Mm-hmm. This is what she left me. One tiny little tape. The last will and testament of Irina Shemeshova. Quality's not brilliant because this isn't the original.
Oh? He copied it and put the original back in the dead letterbox.
I had my own welfare to think of, right?
The Moscow Center might not cut his throat if they thought he hadn't heard the tape.
Seems a reasonable working hypothesis.
Okay. Here goes then. Oh, and she calls me Thomas all the way through.
Thomas was his Australian identity.
Thomas, listen to me. This is my gift for you in case they take me away before I have a chance to speak with Zololine. I would give you my life, Thomas, my body naturally. But this is all I have. Use it well, Thomas. Tell it only people who you trust. And do not trust anyone inside what we call circles, because no one can be trusted until riddles solved.
So who could I trust?
For 2 years before I was attached to the trade ministry, I work as a supervisor in the filing department at headquarters in Dzerzhinsky Street.
That's Moscow Center she's talking about.
I know.
God, work was so boring, Thomas. Atmosphere not happy. Also, I was not married. In the same department was Ilov, as clerk. He was blonde, Thomas, like you. And I wanted him. He admired me very much, too. We worked many time night shifts together. We begin to meet also outside the work secretly because he's against regulations.
She was having an affair, okay?
Forgive me, Thomas. Sometimes only our body can speak for us. You should have appeared in my life earlier. We used to go also to the room of Ilov's cousin, who was a teacher at Moscow University. No one else was present. It was in teacher's apartment that Ilov told me of great conspiracy. Perhaps make himself very important, very, I don't know, very masculine to me. Perhaps also to hold us together with his great secret.
We come to a new day. She kicks off with a lot of good morning, Thomas's love talk, prayers. I've marked the place here somewhere. She was a very religious woman. Funny, isn't it? You don't expect it in a commie. Boris has gone out early, so she's got a bit of time to herself. Okay.
Please.
Mm-hmm. Thomas, have you heard of Carla?
Who hasn't?
Carla is the most mysterious man in Moscow Center. Even Russians do not understand the meaning of such a name. He is a head of Directorate 13. He was very nervous to tell me this story, very frightened. He told me he once worked for Carlo in secret capacity, very, very secret.
Now we come to it.
Ilov was stationed to London Embassy under cover of being driver and assistant coding clerk. But he had also second job, work name Lapin. He was secret assistant to Colonel Grigory Viktorov. And Viktorov at London Embassy had work name Polikov. His car is
Polikov,
cultural attaché.
Just a minute.
He was secret assistant to Colonel Grigory Viktorov. And Viktorov at London Embassy had work name Polikov.
Stop there.
His...
Polyakov. Is that right? Polyakov.
Near enough, I should think.
Okay, to go on.
Please.
I was cultural attaché. To organize lectures to British universities concerning cultural matters in Soviet Union. But he is also from Directory 13. And his true job is to service British mole codenamed Gerald.
All right so far?
Yes, thank you.
Go on.
Mole Gerald is object of deep conspiracy, Thomas. And do you know why? Can you guess?
Wait for it.
It's because Mole Gerald has penetrated deep inside British Secret Service. That's what we call circus. This is why you can trust Nolan, Thomas. Do you understand? One of the most important men in your circus is a Russian spy.
Depressing time of the year, don't you think?
I've never given it much thought, Oliver.
No, you wouldn't, I suppose. One season must seem much like another in Chelsea.
Yes.
I'll be seeing the minister first thing. I think I should put him in the picture. Don't you?
I suppose so.
Well, he must be told, George. We're to believe Tar and what we heard on that cassette. The Russians have a man in the circus. I don't see how I can avoid telling the minister.
Yes.
Oh, why the devil did that wretched Russian woman have to choose a man like Tar?
Because he was there, I suppose. Fortunately for you, I would have thought.
You believe him, then?
Not entirely. Tar's probably playing some little game of his own on the side.
Yes, I must admit that the same thought crossed my mind.
It's always been the trouble with Ricky Tar, knowing where to draw the line.
Doesn't that make him rather unreliable as an agent?
In some ways. But he does seem to have a way with women. And I am inclined to accept the main thrust of his story.
Now, the Russians have penetrated the circus. You think Mole Gerald does exist?
I think it would be most unwise to assume that he doesn't.
Indeed. We can't move them. The circus can hardly investigate Tar's allegation without alerting the mole.
If there is one.
Quite.
It's an awkward dilemma.
So, what do we do, George?
You could call in the competition.
Never.
Oh, they are the experts.
The minister would never wear it, and neither would I, for that matter. Damn it, George, we've got 600-plus agents in the field. I wouldn't give much for their chances once you turn security loose.
I wouldn't give much for their chances with a Russian mole inside the circus.
That's the crux, isn't it? I say again, George, what do we do? What would you do?
My first priority, I suppose, would be to see if Ricky Tar's story stands up.
And how would you do that?
Well, even a Ricky Tar couldn't invent a story like that out of nothing. Somewhere there will be evidence that will corroborate or contradict it. All you have to do is find it.
Yes.
It's a fairly routine process, Oliver.
And time-consuming, of course.
Yes.
So... I can tell the minister you'll do it, can I?
Me?
Well, it's your legacy, George. It's your generation. You can't just abdicate that responsibility.
You discharged me from that responsibility, Oliver, remember?
Yes.
I'm out of it now.
But don't you see, George, because you're out of it, you're untainted. You're the only person I can trust.
What happens if Ricky Tar's story does stand up? Have you thought about that?
We can cross that bridge when we come to it. One step at a time.
Well, George. Very well, Oliver.
That settles then. Excellent. Let's go back inside then, shall we?
They're taking their time, aren't they, Mr. Gillen?
Are you surprised?
I'd have thought Irina's story was clear enough. One of the top guys in the circus is a Russian mole. Period.
It's not that easy, Ricky.
Sorry to have kept you waiting.
That's all right. I've got nowhere else to go, have I?
Well, yes, you have, actually, if you don't mind.
What do you mean?
We'd like to put you on ice while we check up on a few things.
Yeah, well, you be damn careful where you go poking your nose.
Ta!
Yeah, well, it's not your head on the block, is it?
We'd like to move you to a safe house for a while.
How safe?
Safe enough. Fawn will go with you.
I don't need a babysitter.
You do, Ricky. I insist on it.
You can keep an eye on each other.
Yeah. You're in charge then, are you, Mr. Smiley?
It would seem so, yes.
All right, then. When do we start?
As soon as possible.
Before you go, Ricky, perhaps you'd just clear up a couple of points for me.
Sure.
All this business in Hong Kong.
Yeah, what about it?
It was over 6 months ago.
So?
Well, what have you been doing since?
I flew out to Kuala Lumpur pretty damn quick. I've got a daughter out there, Danielle. I shacked up with her and her mother.
He's got women scattered halfway around the globe.
Yeah, but only one kid.
Hmm. So what made you choose this particular moment to come to us with your story? I think I would have preferred to stay with my daughter, but then I don't have one.
There were rumors.
What sort of rumors?
Some Frenchman poking around in KL, spreading it about that I owed him money.
And?
I don't owe anybody money.
I see. What passport have you been using, Ricky?
British. In the name of Poole. Do you want to see it?
May I?
I had it run up in KL. I chucked my Australian identity as soon as I landed.
That's quite good, isn't it?
That's not bad for the money.
Not bad at all. And what about the blank Swiss passports, the ones you took to Hong Kong? Why didn't you use one of those?
They may have been blank, Mr. Smiley, but they were still numbered. If London had the numbers, maybe Moscow did too.
Then what did you do with them?
Sold them, most likely. Or swapped them for that one.
I burned them.
You burned them, I see.
Yeah. Well, is that everything?
I think so, Ricky, for the moment.
He's lying, George.
I don't know.
Well, you can't possibly believe that nonsense about burning the Swiss passport.
No, he's holding something back, obviously. But I would have thought the rest of the story was far too complex for someone like Ricky Tarr to invent.
Someone else might have invented it for him.
And turned him.
It's possible.
Ricky said he sent two cables from Hong Kong, didn't he?
Three. The original on the morning of the 10th of April, the flash follow-up the same evening, and his reply to London's questionnaire around lunchtime on the 11th.
They would have been logged at this end, wouldn't they?
Oh, yes. There's no way around that.
Where would those logs be kept?
In the duty officer's room, same as ever.
Then I'm afraid I'm going to ask you to stick your neck out, Peter.
No.
We have to check those logbooks.
Things have changed since your day, George. I've been banished to Brixton. I can't just walk in and out of the circus as I please. Not anymore.
I'm sorry. You'll just have to invent some reason for a visit.
All right.
And make it watertight. We don't want to arouse suspicion.
So you don't want me to actually steal the logbooks?
A sight of them would be enough. All we need to know is, were task cables ever received? And if so, by whom?
It would have been outside normal office hours. Hong Kong time is 9 hours ahead of us.
Yes. So it might be worth checking the janitor's rosters. See who was actually inside the building that night.
Two nights.
I better still. Sorry to load all this on your shoulders, Peter. But you're the only one with legitimate access.
Understood. Where will you be? At home?
For a while, but don't contact me there. The phone may not be secure.
Where then?
Do you remember Mendel, the special branch man we worked with on the Fennan case?
Well, that's going back a bit, isn't it? He'd have retired by now.
Yes. He's keeping bees now. From a semi-detached in Mitcham, would you believe?
How do you know that?
Oh, we've kept in touch. The point is, I phoned him from Lacombs before we left.
And?
He'll be our clearing post until I've settled in somewhere. I'll give you his phone number. I've got it here somewhere. There.
Yeah, thanks.
I want an operational HQ for this job. Actually, Mendel's already suggested a small residential hotel, you know.
Suitably discreet.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I'm hoping he'll have it all sorted out by the time I get back from Oxford.
Oxford? Well, why are you going to... Doesn't Connie Sachs live in Oxford now?
At the bottom. Where else?
Be quiet.
Hello, Connie.
George Smiley.
How are you, Con?
You lovely, darling man. Come in, come in.
Thank you.
Get flush, you stupid boy.
It's all right.
No. It's not every day my oldest lover comes to see me.
I brought this for you.
What is it, you old sinner?
Only sherry, Con.
We'll see if it's any good then, shall we? In here, George.
Thanks.
Basket, Flush. Basket. There's a good boy. Here, George, you can deal with the bottle.
Of course.
I'll see if I can find a clean glass for you.
No, don't worry about me.
Oh, you can't let me drink alone. Here. This looks unpolluted.
Thanks. Here you are, Con.
Oh, God bless, George. God really bless.
You too, Con. You too.
Come alone, have you, George?
Except for the sherry.
Bad boy. Well, there's no need to stand about, is there?
Thank you.
That's better. What do you want from Connie now?
Just half an hour with the most priceless memory bank the circus ever had.
Oh, damn you, George Smiley. Do you know what she told me when she threw me out?
When who threw you out?
The head cow in personnel. I mean, do you know what she said?
No.
You're losing your sense of proportion, Connie. It's time to get out into the real world. I hate the real world, George. I like the circus and all my lovely boys.
I got a letter for you here from Oliver Lacon.
Oh, George, damn you. So how could you let someone like Lacon in?
It was Lacon who let me in, brought me back in. Here, let me top you up.
Bad boy. Fuel old Connie's memory banks. God bless.
To you, Connie.
Who is George looking for?
One Viktorov, Colonel. First name, Grigori.
Viktorov.
13th Directorate, one of Carla's hoods.
Oh, sorry, George, it rings no bells with me. And that's got nothing to do with the booze.
I know, Carl, I know. What about Polyakov? First name, unknown.
Alexei.
Hmm?
Alexei Alexandrovich Polyakov, cultural attaché, Soviet Embassy, London.
You know him?
Oh, yes. I know, dear Alexei. Jolly giant of a bloke. Lovely voice, too. I used to play the tapes twice just to hear him speak. Is he still around, George?
Apparently.
Busiest cultural attaché in town. If you needed something in a hurry, a lecturer, a musician, you name it, Alexei cut through the red tape faster than anyone alive.
How did he manage that?
Not how you think, George Smiley. Oh, no. Alexei Alexandrovich Polyakov was pure as the driven snow. You ask Toby Esterhazy, you ask Percy Alleline, ask any of them. Phooey. He was a hood. A six-cylinder Carla-trained hood, if ever I saw one.
All right, Con. I believe you.
They wouldn't even listen to me, George. They wouldn't have listened to anyone, not even you.
I didn't even know.
Oh, you were on the down staircase yourself. Oh, please don't go hunting with the Lakons. Please.
Why were you so certain Polyakov was one of Carla's people?
I knew it the moment I laid eyes on him.
Why, though?
There was something about him. Ramrod back. He had army written all over him.
And Carla always recruits his top men from the army.
And what's more, the Soviet embassy already had 3 cultural attachés, and one of them had nothing to do but cart the flowers up to Highgate Cemetery for poor old Karl Marx.
Polyakov was surplus to requirements.
Unless the real requirement was not for a cultural attaché.
Ah, so what? You had him put under surveillance?
On the A-list. Toby's lamplighters covered him at random 12 days in 30.
And?
Nothing. He was clean, George, pure as the driven snow. You'd have thought I'd rung him up and warned him that Toby was turning his dogs loose on him.
And then what?
He was put on the B-list and checked out as resources permitted. But after 3 months of that, they'd still found nothing, so he was given the Purcell grading. Investigated in depth and found to be of no intelligence interest.
Dead end.
It's all swept under the carpet and forgotten.
Except by Connie.
Remembrance Day, George. The Russian ambassador was laying a wreath at the cenotaph, and dear Alexei was there with a chest full of medals, and they were all military. I was so excited, I rang Toby Esterhazy. Toby, I said, listen to me, you poisoned dwarf. Polyakov has at last let his ego get the better of his cover. I want him turned inside out, spike his house, his car, put the listeners on him, rig a mugging, anything, but do something, because it's a pound to a penny that Alexei Polyakov is running an English mole.
Yes. Follows the Carla pattern, doesn't it?
Of course it does. Colonel Komarov with the Japanese mole. Colonel Stokovsky with the West German.
What did Toby say when you told him all this?
Oh, he gave me his dead fish voice. Said they were satisfied he was clean, and said if I wanted to take it further, I'd better talk to Percy Allerline. I knew straight away there was something wrong.
What, Carl? What could possibly have been wrong?
They weren't interested, George. Weren't interested. And I thought it was just Toby at first, but it was all of them.
You talked to Percy?
Yes.
What did he say?
Pleaded lack of resources or some such. Accused me of unscientific deduction. Told me to leave Polyakov alone.
Leave him?
You're losing your sense of proportion, woman. Time you went out into the real world. Oh, George. How could he? Damn. One of my young dunderheads come for his lesson. Go and put him off until tomorrow, George.
All right.
Oh, be quiet, Flash, you silly boy. Shh.
Is Miss Saxey?
Yes, but I'm afraid she's not very well today.
Oh.
She's not very ill. Only a tummy upset. You've come for a lesson, haven't you?
Yes.
Can you come tomorrow at the same time? Is that all right?
I should think so. I'll come back tomorrow, then.
If you wouldn't mind.
Bye.
That was Will, the best of my little dunderheads.
He'll come back tomorrow at the same time.
I still teach, you know. Oh, God knows why. Have another sherry, George, I have.
Don't overdo it, Con. Mm. There's always tomorrow.
Tomorrow, it can help me forget. Today, it's helping me to remember. Dear old Alexei Polyakov.
And all his military medals.
He was so good, George. So very good. He had to be Carla trained.
Did he ever use a leg man?
Why should he? He was a cultural attaché.
I seem to remember Komarov had one in Tokyo.
You're a sly old devil, George. You're the best of my lovely boys. Streets ahead of bloody Bill Hayden. You never really liked Bill, did you?
What makes you say that? Bill and I get on perfectly well together, always have done.
Yes, I'd observe. It's just a rumour.
About Bill Hayden?
Hmm. Dixie'd had a run around the park with Anne.
They're cousins, Connie.
No, it was nothing, George. Just a silly rumour.
Polyakov's leg man, Con. Did he have a name?
Lapin. The rabbit. Clerk driver at the embassy. It was such a twerp that I didn't believe it at first. And then one day, Alexei flew off to Moscow, and Lapin moved into the embassy until he came back.
So Lapin was doubling up?
It stuck out a mile, didn't it?
You reported it?
Of course I did.
And what happened?
Connie got the sack. And Lapin went to Liberty Lock home.
I don't suppose we knew him by any other name but Lapin.
No. At the time, I suspected his real name might be Floff. But I could never prove it. Penny for them, George. Hey, you. Did Connie give you what you came for?
I think so, Con. I think so.
Tickets, please. Thank you. Thank you, madam.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Hi there.
Hello, Mendel.
Have a good trip?
Yes, not too bad, thank you.
Fruitful?
I think so, yes.
Come on, then.
Where are we going?
Just round the corner. I booked us into a little hotel in Stassi's Garden, the Islay. Very discreet and totally anonymous.
Sounds ideal.
It is. I've used them once or twice in the past. Did you have a bag?
I dropped it at the left luggage on the way out.
Well, why don't you collect it now? I'll get the car and pick you up at the bus stop. Top of the stairs.
Well, couldn't we walk?
I'd rather not. See you in a couple of minutes.
Hello, Mrs. Graham. We've arrived.
Pope Graham, dear. And you're Mr...
Oh, he's Mr. George.
Mr. George.
Yes, that's right.
I've put you in number 8, dear. Top floor at the back, where it's quiet.
Thank you.
That's what you wanted, wasn't it? Somewhere quiet, where you could work.
That's right.
And I've put you next door, Mr. Mendel.
Perfect. But what about the desk for number 8?
Norman put one in there for you. Lovely Georgian escritoire. Belonged to the Major, that did. He used to treasure that escritoire.
I'll treasure it too, Mrs. Pope Graham. I promise you.
You do that, dear.
Thanks very much.
If the escritoire is not big enough for you, we've got a nice old Georgian card table. The Major used to use that sometimes too.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Graham.
Who was this Major character she keeps referring to?
Oh, right little con artist he was. But charming with it. Sort of bloke old ladies left things to in their wills.
And what sort of things? Escritoire.
Yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised.
Number 8. This is you. Not exactly the Ritz, is it?
No, it'll do.
Oh, there's the escritoire. Victorian, I should think.
Oh, very commodious.
Needs to be. You should see the stack of stuff I've got for you in the car.
Oh? Oh, yes, from Peter Gillam. A little background material.
A little? That'll keep you busy for the next 6 months.
Really?
Oh, by the way, Peter said to tell you he was going into the circus this morning.
Huh?
Yeah. He's arranging to launder some money, if that signifies.
It's as good an excuse as any.
Hello, Mr. Gillam. Haven't seen you for ages.
Yeah, I wondered about bringing my passport, just in case.
Oh, it's not that bad, yet. anyway, you're on the visitors list. See banking section, right?
Lord of Strickland, no less.
Sit, I'll phone through, tell him you're here. He'll probably meet you at the lift.
Third floor still, isn't it?
Hey, don't forget your pass.
Oh, God. Thanks, Brian.
And remind Mr. Strickland to sign it with your time of departure.
Struth. I'll bring a pair of wire cutters next time.
Well, don't blame me. I don't make the bloody rules.
Greetings, Peter.
Hello, Lorder.
In a touch late, perhaps, but no matter.
I don't qualify for reserved parking anymore, do I?
Yes, at a premium now. Anyway, come on, let's not waste any more time.
Good God. What's that?
What? Oh, the coffee machine. Oh, we've had that for months now. You've no idea how many man-hours it saves. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Oh, terribly sorry.
My fault, Lorder. I was miles away.
Hello, Bill.
Peter Gillam. What the hell are you doing here, you old pariah?
Peter's planning some move against the French diplomat and needs to launder some dirty money. Right, Peter?
In a nutshell.
Well, lock up the spoons, Lauder. Lock up the girls, too, if they let you.
Fantastic fellow, Bill Hayden. Incredibly able.
Oh, yes, I know.
Hey, just a minute. Since when did scalp hunters launder their own money? That's meant to be our job.
It's Lauder that's doing the laundering. We're just spending the stuff.
Papers to me, then, please, Lauder.
You should have them already, Bill.
Unless Roy Bland's sitting on them.
Okay. Just as long as we don't cross any more wires.
You see, Peter, London Station couldn't be in better hands. My office is just down here at the end now.
Look, perhaps I should just pop my head round Roy Bland's door, make sure he's got those papers. I mean, without London Station stamp, there's nothing for us to discuss.
Point taken, Peter.
Roy's office is round on the right, isn't it?
About three doors beyond the duty officer's room.
Give me about 10 minutes. I wouldn't mind a chat with Roy anyway.
Fine, I'll be in my office.
All right. Now, duty room. I'll see Roy Bland first.
Can I help you? Peter, how are you?
Hi, Toby.
What are you doing here?
I thought I'd lost my pass. I'll never get used to using the damn things.
No, I mean, what are you doing here, Peter? In the circus, actually.
I'm still on the payroll, Toby. Hadn't you heard? What are you doing?
I was looking for Bill Hayden. I don't suppose you've seen him.
He was down by the coffee machine a moment ago. Might still catch him if you hurry.
The one by the lift.
You mean there are two of those monsters? Move, Gillum. Signals logs. Feb, March, April. Sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth. Strange. Sixth, seventh, eighth.
We should have heard from Peter by now.
I'll give him time. He might have had problems.
Hmm.
Look, tell me about my own business if you like, but what are you hoping to get from the logbooks?
Confirmation that Ricky Tower was telling the truth, at least about the cables he claims to have sent.
But iffy then, this Tower character, is he?
Not exactly iffy.
But he might bend the truth a bit.
If it suited him, possibly.
And if he's on the level?
Then the logbooks will tell us who it was received Ricky's cables and what action they took subsequently.
Gotcha. 64, that's Peter now.
Oh, I do hope so.
Hello?
There's a Mr. William on the phone for Mr. George.
Ah, yes. Yes, put him through. It's Peter.
Thank you. Hello? Peter?
George, I've checked out the duty room.
And?
Every reference to the 10th and the 11th of April is missing.
Missing? How do you mean?
There's nothing in the attendance lists, nothing in the Cyclus log. The sheets for those 2 days have simply been abstracted in their entirety.
But what about the duty officer's log?
Same story. Only there you can see where the pages have been removed with a razor blade. And there's a note scribbled on the back of the preceding page which says, all inquiries to head of London station.
I see.
What's more, it's dated last Friday. And here's the punchline, George. It was initialed by Toby Esterhazy.
Good morning.
Good morning. You would be Mrs. Graham, I presume?
Pope Graham, dear.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Doesn't matter. What can I do for you?
I have an appointment with Mr. George.
Oh, yes. Mr. Oliver, would that be?
That's right.
Mr. Mendel said you'd be on time.
Mendel?
You want room 8 on the top floor.
Thank you.
I'll ring up and tell him you're on your way, shall I?
Come in. Ah, Oliver, do come in.
Mr. Mendel said you were expecting me.
Ah, yes.
Who the devil's Mendel?
An old friend. He found this hotel for me.
It says much for his taste.
And a lot for his discretion.
But has he been cleared, George? Is he secure?
He's special branch. Well,
X. I see.
Would you like some coffee?
No, thanks. I don't have much time.
Of course.
So, is all this really necessary?
All what?
This secrecy.
I'm being very careful.
Which would suggest that you think the Tower's allegations may be true.
Substantially, yes.
The substance being that there is a Russian mole inside the circus.
Yes.
Well, you've obviously made some progress.
It's early days, but yes, I think so.
Go on.
You remember Rikitar's account of his Hong Kong adventure?
Vividly.
And those three cables he sent to London Station asking for full defector treatment for his Russian girlfriend?
Of course. Sometime in April, wasn't it?
April the 10th and 11th.
Ah, yes.
Well, Peter Gillam has checked the circus records for those days.
And?
There are no records for those days. They've been removed from the log.
Might there not be some legitimate reason for that?
Yes, there might. Tar's Russian girlfriend referred to a Colonel Viktorov, work name Polyakov.
A cultural attaché, as I recall.
Indeed. A cultural attaché at the London Embassy, who just happens to be a military man.
Which would suggest...
that he is working direct to Moscow Center's 13th Directorate.
One of Carla's agents?
Most probably. And if he is, he's almost certainly controlling a British mole.
I see.
And what's more, Polyakov used to have a leg man known as Lapin, whose real name was believed to be Iflov.
Ah, yes, the Russian girl's paramour.
Now sadly deceased, I suspect.
What's that?
A copy of a report, part of the material Peter Gillam sent me as background reading.
Blue means what?
Internal circulation low grade.
And therefore unreliable.
Unconfirmed, but interesting, nevertheless. Listen to this. According to a prisoner recently released from Moscow's Lubyanka prison, three state functionaries were secretly executed in the punishment block last July. One of the victims was a woman. All three were shot in the back of the neck.
You think the woman was her inner?
Yes. And I suspect the men were Boris, her partner, and Iflov, alias Lapin, her ex-lover.
Yes.
I know all this is circumstantial, Oliver.
But it does seem to corroborate Tar's story.
Yes. The point is that if Irina was betrayed in London, and the same might have been true of Jim Prideaux.
Ah.
I want you to reopen the file on the Prideaux affair.
Do you, indeed?
I need another line of inquiry, Oliver. We can't go much further with Tar's story. There are no loose ends left.
There are no loose ends to the Prideaux affair either. I make damn sure of that.
But there are, Oliver. I'm sorry. You merely swept them under the carpet.
Not true, George.
All right, your minister allowed his new broom to do the sweeping for him.
Percy Allerline has done extremely well. I mean, since he took over from control, he has won back the trust of his customers. He's produced intelligence instead of scandal, and he's stuck to the letter of his charter. And he has not, to my knowledge, invaded Czechoslovakia.
Point taken.
Hmm.
Have you ever wondered why control should have contemplated mounting an operation like that? It was completely out of character.
We really can't start raking over all that again.
There's a mole inside the circus. If you want me to find him, I must have access to any source of information, any source. And that includes the Prideaux file.
George, you haven't got some personal axe to grind, have you?
No, of course not.
Very well. But if I do raise the file, isn't there a risk of alerting the mole?
We don't need to raise it, Oliver. Only to re-examine it. Just tell us where it is.
I don't know where it is. Just look at the time. I suppose I could go through my papers.
If you would.
There might be some indication there. I'll phone you here, shall I?
Please, and from a public call box. Always from a public call box, if you wouldn't mind.
Is that absolutely necessary?
It would be wise.
Well, goodbye, George.
Goodbye, Oliver. Thank you for coming.
Sorry, it's my fault. I'll be in touch, George.
Soon as you can. Come in, Mendel.
Yeah.
All well?
Fine. He was clean when he arrived. Nothing on his tail, nothing on his conscience.
Good.
He had something on his mind when he left, though, didn't he?
Yes, I should think Oliver Lakin's a very worried man.
So what's your next move?
I want to talk to a man called Jerry Westerby, a journalist.
Never heard of him.
I'm not surprised. He does most of his work behind the Iron Curtain and is a frequent contributor to the circus, if you understand me.
What's truth? You've got everyone out here, haven't you?
It's called Living Your Cover.
And how does Westerby fit in?
I don't know. He wrote me a letter which sort of skated round the edges of the Prideaux affair.
Didn't you follow it up?
Well, I tried to, but Jerry was out of the country. And then I was fired.
So, now you want me to start looking for this Westerby character?
Oh, no. If he's in England, I know exactly where he'll be.
Here you are, Mr. Westerby, sir. One does not fine and a pint of Liffey water.
Lovely, Jimmy. Now we can begin to feed as the war is set.
Is There's a bloke just come and he's asking after you.
Where?
Far end of the bar, tubby bloke, polishing his specs.
Good God.
He's okay then?
Of course he is. Yeah. Hey, George! George! Come on over here, my old love.
Hello, Jerry.
Well, I'll be damned. Sit down, sit down.
Thank you.
Have you eaten?
Not yet, no.
Oyster peel?
Very well.
Another dozen lock fine, Jimmy, and a pint of the black stuff.
And I'd actually prefer wine, Jerry.
Oh, a bottle of the widow Twankey then, Jimmy, and I'll turn mine into a black velvet.
One dozen and a bottle of the velvet.
Oh, welcome, old boy. Long time no see.
A long, long time, Jerry.
I haven't seen any of your circus performers for ages now, to tell you the truth.
Oh?
Now, they put me on the shelf, old love. I should never have sent you that letter.
I burned it as soon as I read it, Jerry. I didn't tell anybody about it.
Very decent of you, old boy.
So it wasn't the letter that put you on the shelf, if that's what you think.
Oh, no, I knew that. Oh, no, it was old Tobe. He's the one who put the boot in.
Toby Esterhazy?
That's why I wrote to you, wasn't it?
What happened exactly? You only hinted at it in your letter.
Oh, I didn't do anything else, did I?
There we are. One dozen and a bottle of the bubbly. Right, Madame de Pompadour's platter. It's what she ate every night before she got down to business, know what I mean? Bon appetit.
Thank you.
It's the biggest thing in the world.
I'll tuck in, old love. Mustn't keep the little blighters waiting.
Bliss, absolute bliss.
About this trip to, where was it? Prague?
Prague. I say, there's nothing untoward going on, is there, George?
Oh, nothing sinister, Jerry. Just trying to put the record straight. You know what bureaucrats are like.
Only too well, old boy, only too well.
So, why were you in Prague?
To cover a UEFA Cup match. Dukla Prague.
Oh, yeah.
There's a bar I go to, a sport. A bit off the beaten track, but Stan, the barman. Stanislas, actually. Been a mate of mine ever since I took the Dukla goalkeeper in there a few years back. It's been the team watering hole ever since.
I suppose that would make you a special customer.
And how, old boy? Favourite son, more like. Anyway, Dukla won, so there was a big celebration down at the sport. Stan got out his squeeze box and everybody was sitting sort of hugger-mugger around the big corner table, you know. Students, players, lots of pretty girls, you know the scene.
Yes, I can imagine.
And suddenly, this kid puts his arm round me like a long-lost brother. Starts showing off his English to impress his girlfriend.
Which kid is this?
Stan's nephew. Army conscript. Short back and sides. Apparently he had to do his national service before he was allowed to go up to university. Is that right?
More than likely.
He was on leave, he was in love, and the whole world was his friend.
Including Jerry.
Oh, especially Jerry, old boy. Jerry was paying for the booze, wasn't he?
Ah, yeah.
Well, to cut a long story sideways, he'd apparently been on some army exercise in the forests up around Brno. Usual sort of nonsense.
When was this, Jerry? This exercise?
A couple of weeks before. End of October, I think.
Thank you.
The thing was that the exercise was scheduled for 2 weeks. Only they were pulled out after 3 days.
Why was that?
No reason given. Just orders. Clear out of the forest, go back to the barracks. The whole forest had to be cleared by nightfall.
Didn't he have any idea why?
Oh, yes. Because the Russians were coming.
How could he have known that?
Because he saw them. His unit had to put off the road to let the Ruskies through. There were a load of motorcyclists screaming at him in Russian to get off the road. Then a staff car full of civilians.
Civilians?
Two truckloads of Russian troops, another truck full of tracker dogs howling their heads off.
Unusual sort of convoy.
But definitely Russian, old boy. Absolutely definitely.
The Czechs were pulled out to leave the field clear for the Russians. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. But that's only the half of it.
Go on.
The next night, the boy said his unit was piled into their trucks and tore around the countryside until dawn, signaling like mad as they went. No one knew what they were supposed to be doing or why they were doing it. But half the Czech army seemed to be on the move.
For no apparent reason.
The boy discovered the reason when they got back to Brno. A British spy had tried to kidnap a general from a research station up in the forest. And the Russians had shot him.
We seem to be talking about two nights, Jerry.
Yeah. What's the whole point, George? The Russians moved in on the Friday. But they didn't shoot the spy until Saturday.
In other words,
They knew he was coming.
Exactly, old lot.
So why were the Czechs tearing round the country creating an uproar?
Good question. A damn good question, actually.
You say you passed all this to Biesterhazy?
I made a dead letter drop for him in Budapest on the way out. I told him the story when I reported back.
And he read you the riot act?
Oh, not straight away, old boy. Well, that was the strange thing. At first he was full of praise. Westerby for mayor, all that. Then he went back to the circus. And next day he was foaming at the mouth, screaming I was too pissed to tell fact from fiction.
I see.
It's a very odd sensation, that I don't mind telling you. Like watching somebody try to squeeze a toothpaste back into the tube.